Blog Talk Radio.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
Welcome to the new Panic Room episode 33, would you believe? 33. Yeah, I'm feeling old now. It is Friday night, 9:30 Central. I don't know how that translates, to be fair, because I'm not really used to all the time. We have one time zone in England, and that's that. So, and we're bloody well happy, I tell you. We're happy with it. So, hey, yeah, Thursday night, and we've got a show. We'll have to ask Xtina about that when she finally gets herself away from the liquor cabinet. But it is. We've got a show. We've got a couple of fantastic guests. A little bit nervous because one of the guests is actually me, which will be going to be interesting. And we have Shane McKenzie as well, a fantastic horror author. So it is all exciting. But it would not be the new Panic Room without my fantastic, wonderful, sexy co-host S, Xtina. How are you?
Oh no. Xtina has been at the wine again.
Already, you know. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Professor Hawking. Thank you. Oh, it wouldn't be, you know.
I know, I have a big glass, too. You know, I had to get a bigger glass than my normal wine glass. I'm like, that's just not going to do for tonight. Let me fill this
I think a bigger glass would actually be, technically, would be a bucket, to be honest, for you, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Just dispense with glass. Just swig it straight out the bottle, you know. I mean, why not?
I think there was a week that I just bring the bottle. I was like, screw it. It's nice and cold, and it's perfect, and I just drank right out of the bottle. But I'm trying to be a little more refined tonight.
Stick a straw in the middle, in the bottle there, and slurp away. That's what you need to do. Hey, so how are you? You had a good week and whatnot?
I did have a good week. I can't really.
Well, that
tell
makes
you what
a change, doesn't it? Because normally you're just whining, but.
Shut up! I am not. No, it was a good week. I'm still reading. You know, as short as this book is that I'm reading right now, I am still reading it. But I think I'm coming into the close now, so I'm getting all excited. Even though I've read it before, and let's see what else did my week consist of? I started on a new TV show that I'm totally obsessed with, and.
Go on, do tell.
Californication. I know it's a little old, but I've never seen it.
Oh, I love that show.
It's so good. No, I've never seen any. I had no idea what it was about.
Big David Duchovny fan, obviously.
He's okay. I was never strong for him, one way or the other.
Kind of lost its way a little bit, but other than that, it was awesome. I saw everyone. Yeah. I mean, finished a couple of years ago now. I think they did about six, seven seasons. Brilliant show. Seven.
And I heard they
Fantastic.
Were supposed to end it on season six, but it went on for another season. So that might have been a weird,
you could tell, you know, they kind of sort of were wringing out the cloth a little bit. And they really, they should have stopped at the end of season six. It was a little bit, I don't know, it's kind of lost its heart a little bit. But, I love that show. I mean, it's just so I aspire to be Hank Moody, to be honest. I want to be him.
Oh, my God. I hate that you said that.
He's just the kind of writer that I aspire to be. You know, just need a shit.
Which is
great.
The boyfriend says the same thing. He does. And I'm like, the guy is such a mess. He is such a mess. But, you know, I'm only in like season two, and it's really good. But there's some of the things that happen on the show, I'm just like, oh, my God.
It gets better. I mean, they have, I forget which season it was, with Marilyn Manson pops up on it, and he's following a rock star. And
it is awesome.
Marilyn Manson is very, very good in the show. I mean, he's not a big part of it, but it comes over very well. I'm pleased you're enjoying it. It's good.
Yes, I really am. I can't get enough of the show. Like, I'll watch, you know, I'll start. I'm like, I'm just going to watch an episode, and then next thing
binge,
I know, it's
binge
like five
watching.
Episodes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm terrible for that. I will do that. You know, I did that with Breaking Bad. You know, everybody said, you've got to watch it. And I watched within the first, I would say, 5 minutes of the first episode where Walter was stood in the middle of the desert in his underpants and the police were coming. And I was hooked, absolutely 100% hooked on that show. And I binge-watched it start to finish and loved every. There wasn't one episode that I thought, you know, what's gone. It was just brilliant start.
That is the sort of
writing that I really aspire to. I mean, to certainly keep me hooked for eight seasons.
No, you know what? I think that show was only like five, and I'm pretty sure that he only wanted it to be five seasons. So,
However, even five seasons. I can lose interest. I mean, I will start watching a show, and within the, you know, at best, I'll struggle through the whole hour, and that's that. But
You know, the craze right now with The Walking Dead. I really enjoyed the first couple of seasons.
I so badly wanted to enjoy that show. I love zombies. I love Romero. I love the whole thing.
But I think the
thought of a formulaic show just switches me off. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And I just couldn't. I saw, I think, first two episodes. Then I picked up some episodes of season three where they're in the prison. And I just couldn't get engaged with the characters, and it just didn't speak to me, you know.
I liked the prison thing. I thought that was really pretty cool, but it's definitely lost something. I think. I don't know if it's. For me, I think it's kind of that it's gotten too kind of soap opera. Well, not only that, but how many times can it's like there's nothing new. What else can you do now? Or I don't even know what season. What is it, seven or something? I mean, they've had a lot of seasons.
Probably, they're about. It's the sort of thing.
Off
I mean,
the main characters.
like you say, it's soap opera with a background of zombies. I mean, it could conceivably go on forevermore, you know. But somebody actually pointed out that a couple of things, that when they were in the prison, said, I mean, they were like a year on in the zombie apocalypse, and who's mowing the grass? Because grass was perfectly manicured. And
That's true.
Cars as well. They were driving around in brand new cars, new model cars. So who's out there making the cars? And the gasoline as well. Yeah, something that people don't realize is that gasoline does deteriorate. And after, I think, about 5 or 6 months, they wouldn't be able to start the cars because the gasoline would be that deteriorated, and where would they get it? So it's things like that kind of spoil things. I think I spoil things for myself, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true, because I don't even think about those
fault.
Kind of things. So, yeah.
But hey, I learned something fascinating this week.
What did you learn?
I learned, well, I'll tell you what, I learned it from your new president. I've studied physics. I understand about nuclear physics. I've read Hawking, etc. But I think Trump really sort of just hits the nail on the head. So let's just see what Mr. Trump has to say about uranium. Uranium is, right? It's a thing called nuclear weapons and other things, like lots of things are done with uranium, including some bad things.
Grab him by the pussy.
Well, there you go. Nuclear physics summed up. Bad things. There you go. Lots of bad things.
What is our country coming to?
What?
I'm
your
so
country
ashamed.
He's hell in a handcart, really. I mean, you know, I mean, seriously? Seriously, there's lots of bad things.
You know,
well, really? Well, thanks for that, Donald. Great.
I'm starting to feel sorry for him, though. I really am, because I'm embarrassed for him. Like, before, I was just embarrassed for the country as a whole, you know, like hanging my head in shame. But now I'm just embarrassed for him. You know, I wonder, isn't anybody watching him? Like, he should have a keeper, like somebody to keep an eye on what he's doing.
Well, it's funny, for his personality type, you know, narcissistic personality disorder type, you know, he will listen to no one. He will believe that he is right, that he is, bad things. You know, that he will not have anybody in that position that will correct him or tell him otherwise. You know, he will believe that
he listens to himself
untenable.
Back and thinks, oh, what a moron I sounded like. No,
yeah, what a twat.
So?
You know, I actually said that. No, it's like a one big practical joke that went horribly, horribly wrong, isn't it?
You know, I know. You know, what is the, I kept seeing all these different posts and stuff that people were saying, you know, they wished Ashton Kutcher was going to like jump out and say we've all been pranked or something. Mm-hmm. And when I was actually watching the election, I felt the same right up until the last minute. I was like, no, this is not going to happen. There's something crazy is going to happen at the last minute. And he's not, you know, and it didn't happen. I was stumped. I was really stumped.
I think everyone was. 800 million people were, I think. Anyway, have we got a show for our listener this evening?
We do. We always have a show, but we have an extra special one tonight.
We've got the guest, the best possible guest that you could ever ask for on any show. I think without further ado, and because it's me, I prepared just a little, I think I deserve a fanfare, to be honest with you. So in a moment with Xtina is going to be interviewing the one and only James H. Longmore, who's going to be giving a merciless plug for his brand new novel Flanagan, which was released from Sinister Grin Press on Saturday the 23rd of February. So cue Jimbo. I think that is the introduction that I truly, truly deserve. Thank you for having me on the show, Xtina. It's wonderful to be here.
Oh, I can't stop laughing. Okay, someday I want to be a guest too, and I don't think I need anything quite so royal as that, but can I pick my own music? I definitely need to have,
of course,
like,
you can.
Song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you know
can.
What I'm going to pick for my theme song, right? You know what I'm going to pick.
Go on.
That song that I love so much, the Sex Metal Barbie, that's totally my theme song.
Anyway, enough about you. Let's talk about me now.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
You know, I wanted to say I love the cover. I really do. That's a badass cover. And I'm very sad that I have not gotten to read it yet, but I have it on my Kindle, and I did open it, and I read the first couple pages, and you start off with a bang. I don't want to give anything away, but you really do. You start off, you know, I expected a little more, you know, seducing or something, but not with you. You're just
I'm a big believer in that grabber, you know. When I read a book, you know, it has to grab me within the first few pages, otherwise I same with anything, TV, people, even, you know, unless they grab me in those first few moments, I sort of switch off, you know. And
right.
With Flanagan, I wanted to set that scene. I mean, I'm not spoiling any surprises, but you know, that scene is almost detached, because from that first scene, it then sort of kicks into Mr. and Mrs. Joe Average, their average day, average sex life, average friends, average jobs. And it's almost like, okay, so, you know, the opening scene was what? Of course, it does all sort of fit together towards the end. But I just wanted to start it with a bang. Again, it's funny enough, I was just reading on the Amazon thing, we don't actually have a tagline for the thing. I need to have a word with Sinister Grin about that. My fault. I should have. My favorite tag, I think, when I was picturing the book, it's Straw Dogs meets the novel that 50 Shades of Grey should have been.
Nice.
For those of you who remember Straw Dogs, also the original Dustin Hoffman and Susan George version, of course, not the remake, because I hate remakes. It's a very full-on book, very, very full-on. I'm sure you will enjoy it when you can be bothered to sit and read it, you know.
You know, no, I'm finished. I'm like 70% done with what I'm reading now, and your book is going to be the next one. And I seriously thought I would have already read it by now because I'm reading a short book. I did not think it would take this long, but I haven't, you know, had a whole lot of time to sit back and do nothing.
Well, no, well, that's fine. I mean, it's the kind of book that I think once you get started, again, it's, I mean, the reviews are coming in now, and people, they sort of get started and can't put it down.
Yeah.
And,
you know, that's how...
I mean,
that's just how your writing is, though, because I went through the same thing when I was reading The Erotic Odyssey of Colin Forche, because I had never read anything Bizarro, and I honestly don't think it would have been something I would have picked up. It just wasn't something I normally read. You know, I read a lot of freaking romance stuff, if you can believe that. But when I started that, I could not put it down. It's like every single time I did put it down, I'd find myself thinking about it and wondering what was going to happen. And I definitely had to keep going, and it was like that until I got to the end. I mean, because I'm kind of like that too when I'm reading something. I'll just peter out in the middle of it a lot of times. You know, I'm like,
yeah.
My life's too short to keep reading here, but that didn't happen. So you have.
Well,
that's good. Writing.
Thank you. That means I've done my job properly.
Yeah,
I think
the thing
with Flanagan is it's not Bizarro. I mean, it's a bit of a departure for me because it's not Bizarro. It's not monsters. It's not creatures like Peed. It's not fanciful time travel like Buds. I mean, it's the monsters. I think I've alluded to this in the past. You know, the monsters are there's two ostensibly average, you know, Joe and Mrs. Joe Doe from suburbia, you know, and me, that's what makes, I mean, we really get into the heads of the characters, or we think we do, and then there's a phenomenal twist, and you think, I've really not, you know, I've misjudged these people, you know. you know, and it, because we get into the heads, and they're sort of an amalgam of a number of serial killing couples from recent history. It's been said that individually, if had they never met, you know, they probably would have just gone on to lead pretty average lives. But there's just something about the synergy of the two of them meeting that they sort of feed from each other and they become boundaryless and pretty much, you know, the sky's the limit and they can go one of two directions. And of course in Flanagan it all goes I'm not going to give too much away, but it's funny how the story it actually came to me in a dream, literally.
Really?
Seriously, no word about it. It did. I had a very, very vivid dream one night about a large breasted young lady in a swimming pool cavorting with a young husband, young boyfriend. And that I woke up, and from there the whole story of Flanagan sort of took shape.
So cool.
And I just sat and I wrote the first draft within a space of, I think, about 3 weeks.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, he obviously underwent a few drafts after that, but the guts of the story was down very, very quickly, and then it sort of elaborated on and polished, and the character sort of came to life. So there you go. I mean, you know, we writers even work when we're asleep.
Yeah, that's really cool, though. I it really is, because I am always wondering where people come up with the stories, and sometimes it's the smallest thing. I remember we had some guest one time, and it was, I think she said it was like an episode of a show, just a small Seinfeld. Do you remember that? I don't remember who the guest was.
I do
was,
remember the author. Yeah, it can be just something.
Yeah, that's so cool. Kind of.
I remember if you ever read, I mean, I think all writers should read it. Stephen King's book on writing, which is him going through his method of writing. And he said that, you know, you have all these ideas swirling around in your head, and then every now and then two ideas will collide and sort of mesh.
Awesome.
And that's when, you know, from there, it's almost like a miniature Big Bang going off in your head. You know, you get that idea and that idea. That'd be separately, you know, may even make a subplot or just a throwaway line or even a short story, but together with something else, bang, you know, it's just, there you go.
You know
there's the book.
It's funny that you said that it was a dream, because how often do I have a bad dream? And what do you say to me? Write it down.
Write it down. Always.
Yeah, I
have a recurring dream, and I've actually written it. I have written it down. And again, it's one of the. It's not enough on its own to be. I don't think even a short story. But I have a dream where I many years ago killed someone and buried them in the cellar in the basement of a house in Leeds when I was at university, a student. And the dream is, and it is reoccurring. And in the dream, I have to go back. To try and to see if they've found it, because obviously I wake up with this fear that they found the body, that one day they will find. So I carry this fear around me that one day they're going to find the body and trace it back. The body was killed such and such time. Who lived in the house then? It was him, and find me. And it's sometimes in those few seconds of lucidity as you wake up.
Yeah,
it's real. Yeah. Oh, shit, they're going to catch me. They're going to find out
and
about this person I killed.
Oh, that's so scary.
And
now,
do
you know who you killed? Because that would be interesting.
It was just I don't know if it was a man or a woman. I just know that, you know, in this dream state, which is partially, I think, where Colton Forshay came from. You know, you just you exist in this other dream state in which I have killed someone and they're buried and one day. They will, whether they're, you know, when they're knocking the houses down to build a supermarket or something, they will find the body and come and find me. You know? So
I will be your alibi.
Disappear,
you say you're with me the whole time, okay?
If I suddenly disappear, then, but that would, to be fair, that would have made you
an accomplice?
10 at
the
time, which is a whole different court case, isn't it? Be honest.
I'm not that much younger than you, am I? I don't think so.
Oh, you're 10 years younger than I am, so yeah, I would make you about 10. So.
Okay, fine.
Frown
semantics,
upon.
Whatever.
Oh, there you go.
Know,
so,
you're not going to get off the hook. Don't you have do you have a reading for us? You're not going to get off the hook.
Oh, do you know? Yeah, I do. I was going to say no.
Don't
I do. I do. Okay. I'll try not to let this drag on because, you know, it could do. I just need to just talk amongst yourselves, listener. It's just booting up on my word. It takes ages on my Mac. I don't know why. It just has to go through like 40 minutes of boot up. But
especially when you're trying to do something that takes longer.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you're right. As you think, I'm just gonna do this, and that little beach ball turns up for 20 minutes. Okay, right. Okay, I'll set the scene. This is it's a little bit of a flashback to an episode that our hero and heroine, our protagonists, experienced together. One of their little adventures, shall we say? Okay.
Okay.
Are we ready?
We are ready.
Okay, this happened. This is a flashback, sort of maybe it's a quarter into the book. I mean, it just gives you a little bit of insight into our characters. Okay, and do buzz me off when I'm done. Yeah. Okay. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Isn't that how the saying goes? It had been four, almost 5 years ago, long before all the infertility crap had consumed their lives. Chris and Helen had spent most of their short vacation in the sinful city, wonderfully naked on the widest hotel bed they'd ever seen, cocooned by bleached white sheets that Helen and Chris had left rumpled, askew and stained. Helen had just adored lounging around on the bed au naturel, her bare breasts pointing their... I didn't know this was rude, I'm so sorry. Pointing their defiance of gravity and nature at the mirrored ceiling, and her freshly shaved pussy pointing, pouting and glistening in a way that made Chris ache. On their second night, they'd paid for a hooker to visit them in their luxurious room. The hooker had been around their age with milky skin, spiked blonde hair, deep blue eyes, and a gorgeously proportioned petite body. In short, she was as exquisite a creature as their newfound wealth could buy. It was unfortunate, then, that their evening had been brought to a premature, abrupt end. Chris escorted the hooker out of their room less than 2 hours into their allotted time. They paid for all night. And paid her handsomely in cash for her services. The hooker had dressed quickly, gathered her purse, and walked across the room to join Chris at the door. She limped and winced with each step, favoring her right leg as she walked. Her face was swollen and already beginning to bruise down one side, her top lip cut and oozing blood. There were scratch marks down her arms and across her back, almost, but not quite, hidden by the skimpy pink halter top. She pulled back on in haste. Sorry, bit of a page break there. The girl's neck and shoulders were also decorated by gaudy red and blue bite marks, the insides of her thighs similarly bruised. "I'm so sorry," Chris had whispered to the prostitute. "I've added a little extra for your trouble. I'm sorry. Just give me the money," the hooker had croaked, her voice strained. She'd absently rubbed at her throat, which had drawn Chris's attention to the large red handprints he'd made around her slender neck. Chris had paid the girl, and she'd left with not so much as a backward glance at Helen, who had returned to the bed and lay face down with her head buried in the pump pillows. There was always the possibility that the hooker's pimp might come knocking on their door, angry at the mess Chris had made of his best girl and demanding further compensation. But Chris had been confident at the time that they'd more than paid her with generosity, in full for the whole night, plus that little extra for the discomfort she'd no doubt be feeling for the following day or two. There'd be no repercussions. Their evening's entertainment had begun with much promise. The hooker had been fully briefed beforehand as to what would be expected of her, and she'd risen to the occasion with aplomb. She and Chris, under the watchful and roused eye of Helen, had gone at each other like rabid animals, biting and clawing, slapping and scratching at each other like things possessed. Helen had watched with increasing discomfort as Chris had bitten the hooker's tits until they were a patchwork of teeth imprints and bruises, and one of her nipples was bleeding. The hooker had in turn spanked Chris's behind so much and so hard that his buttocks and her hand had glowed bright red. She'd also raked her long fake fingernails down along the tender flesh of his butt and broken the skin in places. In her throes, the hooker clamped onto Chris's nipple, biting into it so hard that he screamed out and tried to pull away, but she'd held firm. And for as much as it made Chris squirm and his eyes water, the pain appeared to only further inflame his passions. There had come a point during the brutal sweating exchange when Chris had begged Helen to join in with the hooker and spank him, bite him, anything to inflict pain. But Helen had shaken her head and simply looked on from her place on the bed, fingers busy between her own legs while Chris had demanded his pleasures from the hooker, leaving her wrung out, exhausted and spent. And then Chris had pinned the hooker to the bed with her face pressed into the mattress, grinding his dick hard into her with his hands clamped around her throat, tight. So much so that the hooker had made muffled choking noises and had started to panic. Yet the more she panicked, it had seemed, the more inflamed Chris's lust had become, and the more frantic Helen's masturbation. The hooker had flailed her arms and legs and bucked like a trapped animal to free herself. "Hit her," Chris had growled at his wife. "Me?" Helen had been somewhat taken aback by the unexpected command. "I said, hit her." He nodded towards the struggling hooker, his hands still surrounding her throat. Helen had looked at her husband, at the struggling hooker, her fingers still buried deep inside her own vagina. Slowly she pulled her hand away from her own sex, crawled across the bed and slapped the hooker's ass with a wet hand. "Harder." Helen raised her hand high and brought it down on the hooker's left buttock, hard enough to leave a red handprint on the soft, pale skin. The hooker had squealed and wriggled some more between Chris's weight. Chris had then turned the hooker back over, keeping one hand at her throat to press her into the bed. "Again, baby," he'd grunted at Helen and pointed at the hooker's mascara-streaked face with his prick. "Hit her again." Swept up in the moment, Helen had obeyed and given the hooker a light slap across her cheek. The hooker had looked up at her with surprise in her baby blue eyes that bulged ever so slightly in their sockets. "You can do better than that," Chris chastised. Helen swiped the hooker across the face again, this time with a little more force. "Ow!" the hooker protested. "Oh, for God's sake, Helen," Chris had voiced his annoyance. "Like this." He then punched the hooker full force in the face, closing her eye and bursting her lip. Helen had recoiled, unused to seeing the man she loved behaving like this. "I can't," she cried out, as she clambered from the bed and ran naked to the bathroom. That's it.
That's it. You can't leave me there.
That's it. I'm going to leave it. I'm sorry. I didn't realize that was a naughty bit. I'm so sorry, listener.
I was going to say that's odd for me to hear you read these naughty bits like that. But I will say that I was holding my boobs, though, because of the biting and stuff. I was holding my That's what I love about your writing is that it's so real. Like, the details are just so real that I can see it. And the whole time you're reading, I'm there. So that's really awesome.
Good.
I can't wait to read it now. Yes. Yeah. I'm going to have to finish this damn book.
That's a Yeah, I mean, it is. It's pretty sexy. It's pretty brutal. It's also, you know, say with the detail, you know, it also gets into the heads of the people. And yeah, it will. Hopefully, it's a sort of book that will stay with you, you know, long after you've read it. You know, that was my objective. So hopefully.
We have a listener who has messaged me, and she said that, "What the fuck? I can't believe James left it like that."
So, buy the book, listener. Buy it. It's available on Amazon. It's on Kindle. It has Sinister Grimm Press. It's $16.99 paperback. So buy the book and read it. There you go. Buy the book. Yes. No. I mean, like you say, it's. You know, it's all there. You know, it's everything in 300 odd pages. You know, and but it is. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart. You know, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you say, I my writing is very uncompromising, as anyone who's read anything from me.
Yeah.
Will testify.
I can definitely agree.
There you go. But hey, you know, the great God Stephen King, and I say, you write for yourself, write what you want to read. And there's nothing I find more frustrating than something that is half measures, where they leave something, unless, you know, if it's meant to be left hanging, fine. But where they sort of, they hold back from, you know, from the sex, from the brutality, from whatever. If it's a brutal story, then it's the brutality that makes it. You know, you wouldn't want to read it and it just be, you know, you can leave something to imagination, but not much.
Mm-hmm. It's
my mantra.
So I couldn't wait to have you as a guest so that I could grill you. And can you queue up our little 11 questions?
All going to be 11 questions.
Yeah, I can't
awesome.
Wait.
Awesome. Right, okay. Let me, right, are we ready?
And now, 11 questions.
Okay, what's your guilty pleasure?
Big Bang Theory.
Oh, I love that show. Okay, baked beans, ranch style or pork and beans?
Oh, ranch style.
Okay, puppies or kittens?
Sorry, was that the wrong answer? I'm sorry, I get the beans wrong. I got the beans question wrong.
It's fine, there's no right or wrong.
puppies, definitely puppies. Puppies.
Really? Except for the little yappy ones, you don't like those.
I don't like little yappy puppies, no.
What's your favorite lunch?
Roast beef.
That's mine too. What was your first car?
A Ford Sierra.
What do you fear most, snakes or spiders? You don't fear either one of those, do you?
No, I would say giant centipedes.
Right.
Option three.
Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead?
Pinhead, definitely.
I don't even know Pinhead.
Awesome.
Handwritten or word processor?
A word processor.
Awesome. And favorite alcoholic drink?
Beer. Just generally
one
beer.
One interesting non-writing related fact about you.
I have a honours degree in zoology from Leeds University in England.
I knew that. That's a really good fact, though. I like that. You know, I was
not
really excited.
Not many people know that.
right. No, that's true, I'm sure. And, you know, I'm really excited for your embarrassing story. I can't wait for that because I have to tell an embarrassing story. Yes.
You're going to make me do that as well. Oh, seriously?
I am.
Oh, you know, you can't. Well, yeah, okay. Hang on. Do you want the jingle for that as well? This is hard work.
Of course.
Hi, I'm Patty. And I'm Thelma. What is your most embarrassing story?
Okay. Like I've said before, the majority of my embarrassing stories do involve me soiling myself. So I really have to think hard on this one because I'm sure the listener doesn't want to hear about that. Okay, my embarrassing story is many, 8 years ago from now, back in Blighty, back in good old England, we ran a couple of companies, one of which was sort of involved in and around the adult industry. So we knew We knew porn stars, we knew all the best porn studios, etc., etc. And we, a good friend of ours who we'd done some work with, we're looking for a couple to do, because he was a film director, producer. He wanted a couple to do what they call sploshing, which is basically a grown-up food fight.
Okay.
So me and the wife, yep, we'll have a go at that. We'll do a bit of that. So we were paid, and we were paid handsomely to strip down and literally throw food at each other. Brilliant fun. We did it in as a guy, the guy he knew owned like had an indoor pool, and we used the sort of the one of the my pool house rooms, so it could be swilled down, and we had cakes and chocolate and anything messy and sloppy, whipped cream, etc., etc. And the embarrassing part of it is literally 9 months later, my little girl was born.
Oh my goodness.
And that that is why, dear listener, my little girl was very, very nearly called cold custard. Seriously.
Oh my God.
So there you go.
Wow.
That's my embarrassing
story. I like that story.
One day we may tell her how and where she was conceived, but for now.
I'm going to choke.
There you go. There you go.
Wow.
My very, very brief career as a porn star. Yeah. We only made a few films, you know. But,
The things I learned about you. It was good money.
We spent the money. Funnily, ironically, and probably a bit perversely, we spent the money on a family holiday. We took the kids away for a week. So. Legoland, it was, funnily enough. Went to Legoland for a week, a long weekend. There you go.
Wow. The things I learn about you. I'm still, every time we tell an embarrassing story and I think to myself the things that I learn about you, I still wonder about a tattoo you mentioned the one time on the show that I still think to myself, was he just joking with me? Was he lying or does he really have a tattoo there?
yes, I do. And again, my little girl has seen it, and she will tell people. She will tell people. My daddy has a tattoo on his privates. Don't say that. It's just so fucking wrong.
Wow. Again, I'm having an Aussie moment. You know, thinking of your household there.
Do you know, we probably make the Osborne's house look normal. You know. So.
Yes. Yes.
We have all the dogs. We've got four dogs, for Christ's sake. There you go. You learned something new about me that probably you probably wish you don't know now. But
I just take it all in. That's all I can do right now.
Well, much like we did with the cold custard, actually. But
yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah, actually, we are close to being out of time for this first segment here thingy. So this is where you tell the guests to tell us where we can find you and you know, plug yourself.
Oh, well, you know, I'm everywhere, literally. My new book, Flanagan, Sinister Grim Press, is available now. Paperback and Kindle on Amazon, obviously. I can be found on Twitter, on Facebook. I have my own website, which is www.jameslongmore.com. Everything is on there. All my books, including Flanagan, The Erotic Odyssey of Cotton Forshay, etc. All the anthologies I'm part of, my short movies I've made over the years, even some of my stand-up. And I think next week I'm going to play some of my stand-up, actually. I found a nice little clip I'm going to play for the listener. I'm all over. I mean, just in fact, you Google me. Google James H. Longmore on my... my little name pops up all over the place, but
I've googled you.
Am I there? There you go. So yeah. So hey, thank you for having me on as a guest. I'll be back to be with my host hat on, I think, after this. So
yay!
Can't wait. So is there anything you want to do before we go to for my wee break? Because it's that time, isn't it?
I do. I have some commercials here. Let's see.
Go for it.
A brand new press specializing in horror, bizarro, dark erotica, erotic horror, and dark poetry. Hellbound Books Publishing wants your best stories. Now open for novels, short story collections, and anthology submissions. Please pay no mind to the sulfur smell. Go to hellboundbookspublishing.com to learn more. In the mood for something steamy to read this winter. I'm going to have to change that to this spring pretty soon. But
yeah,
anyway.
this spring. When we were in Texas, winter was like, it was like 3 days about 4 weeks ago. That's it.
Yeah.
It's now in the 80s again.
Yeah. Check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com.
You know, she writes some good stuff.
She does.
That is
she
some
does.
Hot, hot stuff. Hot stuff.
You know, that's true. Very hot. Very hot. I read something and I had a fan myself.
Greatest quote I heard this week was something. It is. They are stories to be read with one hand, which is
what?
Awesome. I like that.
Yes, that's awesome.
because
her,
to
yes.
be fair, listener, they were written with one hand as well, no doubt.
Nice.
Moving on.
Okay, let's see. Yeah, you can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com. And don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com. Yay!
Awesome. Well done. Thank you. And thank you so much for having me as a guest. It's been brilliant. I mean, it's nice. It's great. I mean, you see why guests want to come back, because you have such an awesome time being a guest. It's great. It's great. Best show on the radio or on the whatever on the internet
it
radio. I think
it is.
I, you know, maybe I'm biased, but I like to think so. Anyway, we'll play it. We'll be back in 2:44, which hopefully will be long enough for you to have a big wee. We'll be back.
And I'm
no. Why love you like I do?
No.
Why do? Don't know why I love you. Don't know why I care. I just want your love to share. And I wonder why I love you like I do.
Welcome back to part two. Yes, that was a great wee, I have to say. I'm not sure whether my bladder is shrinking or my prostate is almost the size of a small South American country or not now. One of the two, but all relieved and ready for the second segment now. Now, hey, we've got a new bit, which is I'm excited about. It's the one and only. The one and only Becky Narron, who's going to be reviewing a book, hopefully, ain't he and T willing. Are you there, Becky?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Thank God for that. There's always that sort of little pause. God, you know, the whole system's gone to hell in a handcart. But thank you for joining us.
Thank
you
for
joining us.
Me.
It is your. You are a panic room virgin.
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Great. So we will be gentle. Do you know what?
Okay.
You know, I've forgotten. I've forgotten all the excitement. Hang on a minute.
I know. You just now
I'm
unmuted
sorry.
Me? Oh, my goodness. That's it.
I'm sorry.
I want a divorce.
We are so done. I can mute you again. You know that. Becky, hopefully, Becky is going to be reviewing an awesome book.
Yeah.
Pure coincidence. What are you going to be reviewing for us this evening, Becky?
I'm reviewing Flanagan. But James,
you know,
Moore.
I hear that is a great book. I hear, brilliant author, great book. So
absolutely,
go for it. Do you know, I'm gonna have to create a jingle for the review section, and I haven't yet.
Yes.
I do apologize, but
okay.
Review away, go for it.
Okay. Well, this is the first book that I have ever read that you wrote, but I'm telling you, it will not be the last one. This is absolutely amazing. It hooked me from the very first sentence. I just could not put it down. I read it, I think, in one sitting. I mean,
wow.
You know, family was like, hey, what's for dinner? And I'm like, who are y'all? This ain't y'all. Y'all are going to have to go find something to eat. You know, listen up. From the very first part of it, you're like, holy crap. I mean, I was just blown away. And then the story starts with a couple. I mean, you know, it starts with a couple that finds themselves in this really horrible situation. And you're like, oh, I do not want to be them. And, you know, they've been kidnapped and they're being held, but it's not for ransom. It's because the captors are playing a really sick game. And they've been staked down in this field in the middle of nowhere, and they're hurt, and they've been beaten and tortured and all kinds of things that I cannot even say. And they put this old black alarm clock in between them, you know, the kind with the bell, with the bells on the top of it, and they tell them that when it rings, you're going to die. And so they can sit, they're laying there, and they can hear this alarm clock ticking. I mean, I cannot even imagine. I could see all this happening in my head and the panic on their faces. And I mean, it was just unbelievable that, you know, there was enough description for you to go, oh my gosh. But there wasn't too much. You know, some people, I think, you know, when they write a book, there's way too much description, and you lose, as a reader, being able to see what's happening and what the people look like and you know, their surroundings and whatever. And so I love it when I can see what's happening in a book in my head, like a movie playing.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And so then the story backtracks, and it tells you, you know, about the people that are staked down in the field and what they do for a living and where they're from and, you know, their past history. And then the part that James read, and what they'd like to do for fun, and how they came into money. And then they're going on a vacation. And Flanagan is the name of the town that they drive into. And I'm telling you, this is a one-horse town. And as James put it in his book, without a horse. One of my favorite lines in the whole book. It's a one-horse town without a horse. And I thought, I went to high school there. And so, you know, they go to a flea market, and then they, you know, stop to get something to drink and some gas, and then they go to the motel. And they're kind of like, yeah, well, maybe. And there's this really friendly, overly friendly clerk there. And that he checks them into the motel, and he takes them to their room, and they're trying to get rid of him, and he finally leaves. And the husband goes and get some tacos from the taco truck at the gas station. And they come back and they eat, and, you know, they talk and they have a good time and they go to sleep. And then the next morning, the husband goes to get bagels. And I will never eat a bagel again. Never. Because that's where the crap hit the fan. The wife went to take a swim, and the really nice guy from the motel comes over to the swimming pool. And the husband comes back, and he's got, not the husband, but the motel guy brings a friend with him. And it all goes to hell in a handcart. But the exciting thing about this book, you know, and I'm, as I'm reading it, I'm like, oh, I know how this is going to end. Wrong. You have no clue. This thing has the biggest plot twist in it. I would have never in a million years guessed that this was going to happen. But I'm telling you, it was absolutely perfect. I was so shocked, but I loved it. It fit great. I mean, I don't know how you write stuff like this. I could never do this, but oh my gosh, I highly recommend this book. I cannot tell you enough how much I recommend this book. I loved it, and I will read it again. And
well,
that's saying something.
I am definitely sold, and if I had not already bought my copy, I would be clicking it right now on Amazon. But I already have it, so.
Well, thank you, Becky. I'm sitting here blushing, you know.
Lies.
I'm sitting here blushing. No, I mean, it's great. I mean, it's nice that you know, I'm getting, you know, positive feedback, which is great. And I've achieved what I set out to achieve with the book, which is great, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for reviewing. Hopefully you'll join us next week and review something that's not been written by me.
Absolutely.
Although you never know.
I'd be glad to.
That is fantastic. So, okay.
And your review will be on the blog tomorrow.
Fantastic.
So
do send me the link. And
brilliant. You can read all about you.
And we will link that. We will link your blog to the Panic Room website as well, so our listener can check it out. So there you go. Right, we're going to have to say goodbye now because we have Shane McKenzie waiting on the line. And we will see you next week, Becky. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
Okay,
bye-bye.
And AT&T willing, we should have Shane with us. Are you there, Shane?
Hello, hello.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
How's it going?
I'm pretty good.
Nice to meet you. I have to apologize.
And to you, sir. Thank you for your patience being on hold. I mean, it's been a bit of a James Longmore fest this evening. It's just nice to be able to talk to a proper person, talk to somebody real.
No
so
problem.
Thank you for joining us, Shane. It's an absolute pleasure. Here to talk to us about your book. And it's Muerte con Carne. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
The Tex-Mex Chainsaw Massacre. I'm crap at accent. I can do my accent, and that's about it. The Tex-Mex Chainsaw Massacre. I like that. I like that.
The Italian edition just came out, and it's kind of my most recent release. I've been busy writing a lot of screenplays, so the books have slowed down a bit, but I've been busy. So yeah, that
brilliant.
The Italian edition just came out from Independent Legion. It's beautiful, man. They did a great job. I love it.
Awesome. So I guess the tagline pretty much tells us what it's about, but would you care to elaborate? I love that. Tex-Mex Chainsaw Massacre is awesome. I love the tagline.
It's the quickest, like, what one sentence way to say it. I think it was very, when I wrote it, the book, it was very, very much inspired by my favorite movie, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I just figured, mm-hmm. You know, if I were to do my own version and do it in Texas now, I was feeling a Mexican vibe. I thought giving it a Mexican twist at the border would be fun. It would be cool. It seemed to fit. And so that's basically what it is. I mean, without getting too in-depth of the story, a woman goes to the border to make a documentary about how Border Patrol abuses immigrants as they cross the border. And she ends up getting caught by a cannibalistic family who hunt at the border, waiting for people to run across, and they catch them and take them home and slaughter them for meat. So that is
awesome.
Pretty much what that's about. And now it's in Italian.
Italian cannibals. I mean, to be fair, what more could you want? Really, that is brilliant.
Yeah.
So I am anxious to hear your reading. You have a reading for us, don't you, Shane?
Yeah. I took a little excerpt from the screenplay version of the El Gigante movie. So El Gigante is the short film that we made based off of the prologue to the book. And making that short film with Lucha Gold Productions, that kind of started me on this whole path of screenwriting. Once I got into that world, I immediately knew that was where I knew it was supposed to be. Like, it just, I fell in love real fast. And so that led me completely on this other path. And so I wrote the feature-length screenplay, and we've been in talks with some people, a lot of exciting stuff happening. So I figured, you know, since that's kind of what's going on with me now, I'd read a little chunk from that.
Awesome. We're ready.
All right, here we go. Okay. So, interior, family house, morning. And the character Gustavo is El Gigante, the big luchador, just so there's no confusion. So, okay. Interior family house morning. Cristobal walks a sleep-deprived Francisca down the stairs. She pulls away from him, hysterical. Francisca, where's my son? Give me my baby. When Cristobal grabs her wrist, she yanks away, hits him with her bound hands. Squeezing her throat, he forces her down the remaining stairs and shoves her forward once they reach the first floor. Calm and obedient, Marta allows Gustavo to lead her down. Alma watches him as she sets the table. Carlos, sitting beside Rogelio, looks ill, barely awake. Mama sits expressionless, lost in senility. Chongo excitedly eats from his dish on the floor. Alejandro, chained to the wall beside him, weeping, a steaming bowl of meat untouched in front of him. Grabbing Francisca by the back of the neck, Cristobal forces her to the table, then slams her down in her chair, roughly turns her head so she's facing her son. Marta sits beside Gustavo just as Francisca starts to panic. Francisca. Carlos. Carlos is her son. But I guess there's a lot of context in this one. So Carlos is Francisca's son, and they were also captured by this family. And this is the morning after at breakfast. She reaches for Carlos, but Cristobal grabs her hair and yanks. Alejandro growls and screams from behind him. Alejandro's her husband. Francisca, he's sick. Give him to me, please. Carlos whimpers and begs for his mother. Cristobal, he just needs some food in his belly, that's all. Carlos, mommy. Francisca is slammed back down when she tries to stand. Cristobal, mama's been up all morning cooking for us. Carlos and Rogelio are chained together at the wrist, and when Carlos leaps for his mother, Rogelio yanks the chain. Gustavo points to Martha's plate, smiling through his mask. Gustavo, carne. Turning away from him, Martha locks eyes with Cristobal, who licks his lips and taps his belly. A spoonful of meat is shoved into her mouth. Gustavo catches the meat when Martha tries to spit it out and shoves it back in, grabs her jaw and forces her to chew. Unable to open her mouth, she's forced to swallow, cringing. Alma sits and watches Cristobal feed Francisca. Rogelio smears meat over Carlos' face, giggling as he chews. Mama quietly sips broth from a steaming bowl. Gustavo. Gustavo releases her, then spoons another helping. But before he can feed it to her, she stabs Gustavo in the shoulder with a fork sitting beside her plate, then sweeps her arm across the table. Mama's hot broth bowl dumps into her lap, and she shrieks. Cristobal dashes to Mama's aid, pulling Francisca along. Alma hisses as she cleans the food bits from her face. Alma, kill that puta. At the door, Martha's bound hands struggle with a deadbolt, panicking. Gustavo pulls the fork from his shoulder, then slams his fist on the table and snarls. Finally getting the door open, Martha sprints out the house. Exterior, Checking over her shoulder, she runs across the yard. Marcus screams when Gustavo bursts through the door. He slams his fist into his head, roars, and charges at her. She reaches the truck, yelps when she uses her injured hand to open the door, then dives in and slams the door shut as Gustavo rams the truck like an angry rhino. The impact throws Martha over the center console. She quickly reaches over and locks the doors, then checks all over for the keys but finds nothing. Martha, shit! He nearly rolls the truck over with another slam. Martha, leave me alone! Crushing his face against the door window, his breath fogs the glass. Drool oozes down. He cocks his head back and smashes the glass. He headbutts it again, shoving his head through the glass, shredding his skin. When he roars, a bloody mist sprays over Martha. Martha kicks him in the face repeatedly, but it has no effect. Pulling his head back out, Gustavo reaches in, unlocks the door, and throws it open. He yanks her from the trunk, from the truck, and drags her back toward the house by her ankle. The end.
Awesome. Awesome. I like. You evoked one of my favorite tropes, which is the sort of the crazy redneck. Reclusive cannibal types, you know. I love that. I mean, the original Chainsaw Massacre. Don't be too controversial, but I think it was far better than the remake. You know,
I like
the remake. Like the remake. You always like the remake. Just shut up. Be quiet. I can press the mute button right now. Yes, I can. To be fair, the remake was okay. As remakes go, it wasn't so bad. But the original just had that gritty, grimy. Toby Hooper did such a job with
exactly.
it. Gritty, grimy.
Yeah.
I think the thing that got me, and again, I saw it first, many, it was actually on the video nasty list in England in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed to, this is when video VCRs were rare. And my friend's auntie had got one. So she was at work. We used to go around to her house. And we got a copy of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I think the bit that I really, really cringed most at was where the girl was at the table. And she was strapped. The arms were still in the strap.
Yeah.
From the previous victim was still attached to the chair, and where they cut her thumb to feed grandpa. When they sliced her thumb, that just on top of it, all the other brutality, that was the bit that really got me. You know, it just but it was such a great
movie. So
much
of it was a lot was going on. There's people getting killed left and right, and you don't really know what the fuck's happening. And then at the table, they're just kind of sitting there. And it's like you kind of have a moment of quiet with them. It's awful.
Yeah.
And she's
just like it was just.
And her eyes are like rolling. And then Leatherface is just kind of like slowly getting closer to her and just looking at her. That's fucked up.
A parody of a happy family dinner, but it was so beautiful. I mean, the setup with the dead things and the bones and everything, the whole thing was just, and obviously the
very opening, with the bones and the camera noise.
And it's funny because Ed Gein was a big influence on the movie. Because it actually starts with the grave robberies and the mysterious grave robberies and that, which is how he started before he killed people. He dug up old women and made ornaments out of their body parts,
nipple belts and a crane of cereal bowls and stuff.
Do you know? I mean, you know, people. You have to have a hobby. I think you know.
You do. That's true.
Some people do quilting.
How well crafted stuff works.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of the creepy inbred, cannibal people, I just saw The Hills Have Eyes for the first time not too long ago.
Yeah.
The
remake or the original?
Oh God, I didn't even know it wasn't so it must have been the remake because it wasn't. I don't think it was that old. No.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I like that remake. That was a fun remake. It was. It really upped the mutant factor. and I like it.
I think
it,
so,
know?
Yeah.
They're way more mutated.
It's probably on the list, on the very rare list of remakes that were at least equally as good as, because the original was, again, a classic. They remade one and two, and they were both good. They were both very, very good, yeah. So I would watch them again. Again, what was the other one there? Like Wrong Turn. That was another good one with the cannibal.
Yeah, I was
going
to mention that one.
Wrong Turn.
I
liked
that.
Wrong Turn.
Yeah.
Cool.
Wrong Turn. That. I
like,
mean, as the series went on, it got
just came out
ropey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I watched it because I have a total girl crush on Eliza Dushku. So that's that's what brought me to the movie. She's
totally.
She's hot. Come on now.
what better than watching her fight inbred mutant freaks? In the woods. It's even better. I think she has a crossbow at one point. Come on.
Hey, I just, I loved her since she was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I have a soft spot for her. So I love that show. And I'm actually rewatching
now. Could we not talk about your soft spot, please, Xtina? Could we just...
Isn't it my
just
sweet
leave that
spot?
There. Leave that
isn't
there.
Isn't my soft spot?
Just leave it. Family show.
I mean,
family's
well,
not
mine. It
family.
Is not a family show.
Well,
God,
you've had it.
When you said that, I got scared. Oh, shit, it's
the
family show.
Yeah, for kids. Think of the kids. Think of the children.
You know, as I was buying wine the other day, my son said something to me about drinking, and I said I was doing the children a favor because the more wine I drink, the less there is for the children.
That's true.
There you
That's
go.
True.
There you go. And it helps you to tolerate the children as well, I find.
It does. A
couple of beers, and they're all right, yeah. Yeah, can I sleep and watch porn? Yeah, you do that, whatever you want. Can I drive the car? Yeah, have the fucking car, you know. Love it. Love it. So I guess, I mean, shame we needn't ask where your inspiration for this particular story comes from, but generally, where does your inspiration as a writer come from?
Really, it comes from everything. You know, I get inspired by just anything created well, you know, anything done well, I just get really excited about it. I mean, and there's so much content these days, and there's so much good stuff. Like it's overwhelming how much good stuff there is. But growing up, as far as getting the horror bug, I struggle answering this question because I don't really know. It's kind of is just there. You know, the first time I saw monster movies, and I think the first monster movies I saw were the Universal classics, and I just thought the monsters were really cool. I remember going to Universal Studios, must have been 4 or 5, and I got a Frankenstein doll, and I just remember loving it. And I got a ceramic skull that I still have. I don't know where the fuck my Frankenstein doll is though. But anyway, and then I saw Michael Jackson's Thriller, and the Thriller music video kind of solidified it for me. Zombies were cool, you know. Michael Jackson was the coolest thing,
right?
And he was dancing with zombies, and he was a werewolf at one point, and it just was like, okay, this is what I love. And I can't tell you how many times I watched that, and the making of the video too. I was always inspired by how these things were made. And so, yeah, man, I didn't even discover books really until college. I was kind of the student that rebelled against reading because they told me I had to read, so of course I don't want to read. So it was all movies and video games for me. So I went to school to design video games. I wanted to make...
Oh, wow.
Horror games like Resident Evil or something like that. I knew I wanted it to be horror, so I went to school for that. Right about when I was going to graduate, I realized I didn't really want to do it anymore. It wasn't scratching that itch for me. And so I tried to do special effects for movies, like practical special effects. I read a lot of books on that. I've always loved that, American Werewolf in London. that transformation scene and The Thing. So stuff like that really affects heavy stuff. I just love it. And I found out I was not good at that at all. So I was getting nervous, like, what am I going to do? Because I have to do horror. And just discovered books. It's weird to me that it took that long, but I just discovered books and started reading books and was like, holy shit, man. You can make a movie for free by writing a book. And so I spent all my energy learning how to do that, and it just kind of that clicked. You know, storytelling is the most fulfilling thing I could ever possibly do. So, yeah, I just love storytelling in general, really, and horror just happens to be my favorite flavor, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry,
I was talking while you were interrupting. I'm so sorry, Xtina. So you go right ahead, my dear.
I was just going to ask who he likes to read. You know, that's it gives me, you know, something to look into whenever I hear people's recommendations of who they like to read. And
we do get some really good recommendations on this show, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So who do I like to read?
Yes, sir.
My favorite has to be Joe Lansdale. Have you read Joe Lansdale?
I haven't, no.
No, I have not.
Joe Lansdale, to me, is the best. He's from Texas, like me, and his style is just so East Texas, and it's just charming as hell, and I love it. It's not horror. He does horror. He did Bubba Hotep. See the movie Bubba Hotep?
I do remember Hotep, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so that was him.
Stories.
Oh,
yeah.
The
TV show Happen Leonard is Joe Lansdale also. But he, man, if you haven't read Lansdale, then I'm jealous of you because you get to read them for the first time. I highly suggest the Happen Leonard books. It's just kind of an ongoing series. But you can't go wrong with anything. All of his stuff
awesome.
Is excellent. Yeah.
Awesome.
And I could recommend people forever. There's so many good people. A newer author, a guy named Adam Caesar. I think Adam Caesar is great. We've collaborated a few times together. We're collaborating on something right now. He just, to me, you know, he's that kid, you know, that grew up kind of in the same era as me that went to the video store and rented every horror movie and obsessed over everything horror. And you just see it in everything he writes, and I just love it. It makes me happy. Like, I get it makes me smile like a little kid, you know, at the video store and I read shit. And other than that, my main thing that I read now is nonfiction books about storytelling. Like, I'm really obsessed with the nuts and bolts of it.
Right.
So I mostly read stuff like that, or you know, memoirs of writers, that kind of thing. I eat that shit up. I love it.
Now, normally I prepare our guests a little bit for this, and I didn't with you, but would you like to participate in our 11 questions? Just
sure.
Say yes. Yeah, I was going to say, just say yes. So do you have to give me
just
say yes. Because I don't have it, you know. What? That was smooth.
I like
what?
That. I didn't get
prepared. What a great segue, wasn't it? It was.
I would rather be surprised. Just punch in the face with it when I'm not looking.
Right. Okay, you got to do the music or something. You know, I'm waiting
on
you.
Yeah, I was just ready to sit back and just, you know, enjoy myself. Listen to the, let's go for this.
And now, 11 questions.
Okay, what's your guilty pleasure?
Well, my guilty pleasure?
Yes, sir.
Disney movies.
Awesome. Ooh, which one's your favorite? That's not one of the questions. That's just mine.
The Lion King, for sure.
Oh, see, I love Mulan and Hercules. Okay, baked beans, ranch style or pork and beans?
Pork and beans.
Puppies or kittens?
Can we blend them together?
Gross.
Put one of each in a blender. In a purifier.
I like Island of Dr. Moreau all over again.
Yuck.
Oh, yeah. But like a protein shake.
Oh, gross, gross, gross. Okay, moving on. What's your favorite lunch meat? Oh, that's a great one to move on to.
Head cheese.
What was your first car?
89 Ford Thunderbird that broke down every day. And every time I drove it to school, it was smoking. And it would shut off while I was driving. I would always have to throw the neutral and restart it while I was
awesome.
Rolling.
Yeah. Okay, what do you fear most?
Chrome hubcaps on it because I thought I was a thug.
Okay, what do you fear most, snakes or spiders?
What if there was a snake head with spider legs coming out of it? Like on the thing. I would be scared of that.
Do you know, I would
one of those.
I would watch that. I would watch that movie. You need to write that.
Yeah, or snakes that spit spider nests. That would be terrible.
Oh yeah,
just
I love
sacks
that.
Of spider babies that they spit out.
Oh
yeah,
no. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm
bad.
I'm
bad.
Let's think of three more.
Okay, Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead?
Leatherface.
Ooh, good one. Good one. It's not on the list, but, you know, he doesn't play by the rules, James. Okay.
I like it. I like a nonconformist. He's awesome.
Yeah.
Leave him alone.
But from those three,
okay.
Freddy, because
okay, first
Freddy
draft.
Actually
scared
the shit
okay, sorry. First draft, handwritten or word processor?
The first draft of actually writing it?
Yeah,
Not preparing?
No.
I'm on the processor.
Yeah, I don't think
draft.
Anybody... Does anybody handwrite stuff anymore?
We will find someone, I'm sure.
Okay,
I handwrite everything when I'm conceptualizing, when I'm coming up with ideas, all of that's handwritten. So I have tons of journals filled with actually writing it. It seems like just an extra step that isn't necessary to handwrite it and then type it, you know. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I
handwrite
all the time.
Onto
I just
my
can't
laptop
write it. I can't read it afterwards, so it's not knowing you. Okay, favorite alcoholic drink. As I take a sip.
Marijuana.
I like
puff,
this guy.
Puff, pass. Yeah.
I don't really drink.
Okay. And one interesting non-writing related fact about you.
One interesting non. My day job, I'm a 911 call taker.
Oh, you know, that is so
awesome.
Cool.
Awesome. There we go.
Yeah. That...
So we hang on. I need to finish. I need to close this with a thing, don't I? Because I need there's something I always wanted to ask. Just a second. See that signals that bit's done. Shay, so come on, as a 911 call taker, what is the most horrific, disturbing call you've ever taken?
So that I get that question a lot.
I can imagine.
And
yeah.
If I told you the truth, it would just. I mean, what I'm going to tell you is true, but if I told you the actually most disturbing call I've ever taken, it would just be really depressing. So I'll give you the craziest.
Okay, go for the craziest.
How about the weirdest? Let's go weirdest. Because there's some really traumatic shit. But weirdest was just last Halloween actually, and I was working. I was like the middle of the night, Halloween. I took the day off of writing. I was watching horror movies and eating Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. And so I get a call. These people found a cardboard box on their porch. Right? They have no idea where it came from. So they bring it in the house and then open it. And dog jumps out of it. The dog... immediately starts running around the house vomiting.
Oh my god.
So, the dog is just making circles around the house, just puking, like a flood of dog vomit. And anytime they got near it, it would growl at them and, like, snap at them. And so they would back off, and it would go back to vomiting. So that was pretty crazy. I have a feeling that they weren't giving out candy that day. They fucked with the wrong kids or something.
Awesome.
That was nuts. And you could just hear it in the background just, it was
crazy. Oh, God.
Well, you know, I am so sad to say that our time is almost up, and I thank you so much for coming on the show. I've been stalking you for quite a while, and will you come back and see us?
Of course. No, it was fun. I had a good time.
Oh, wait, we've got to have you back, Shane. You've been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, and tell us where we can find you online.
To be honest, I've been such a slacker online because of I'm just writing so much. Mm-hmm. People have been telling me, like, where are you? But Twitter, you can go to Twitter. It's Shane P. McKenzie. Because Shane McKenzie is like an Australian bobsledder or something, and it was already taken. So I'd use my middle initial, so it's Shane P. McKenzie.
Okay.
You can find me there. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have your links up on the Panic Room Facebook page for
cool.
anybody who wants to go there. So, we thank you very much for coming on the show, Shane, and I will be stalking you to get you to come back and see us.
Yes, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure, Shane. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you.
Okay, have a great evening. Okay, bye-bye. Well, I can't. Where's the time gone? What happened there then?
I know.
I tell you what we need is President Trump to maybe explain time sometime to people. You know, time is people do bad things with time, and time is clocks.
Yeah, bad time.
Bad clocks.
No, do you remember when we first started the show? And we had 2 hours, and sometimes, you know.
Oh, did that drag or what? Jeez.
Yes.
I was sat there, so contemplating sawing at my wrists with something sharp, just for something to do, you know.
I was going to say I had visions of taking my finger and swirling it into my eye socket just for something to do, but.
Yeah, just to relieve the boredom, but.
Yes.
Yeah, time marches. It goes far too quickly. Obviously, we had two fantastic, phenomenal guests this evening. That first guy was my favorite, obviously. I thought he was great. I really do. Shane
was
an absolute, absolute star. What?
And I forgot to ask you if you would come back and see us.
No, not a fucking chance. No, never again.
Lies.
Never again. Right, it is now time. We're going to play us out. It's time to say good night, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
The sweet, sweet memories you gave of me. You can't beat the memories you gave of me.
Take one fresh and tender kiss.
The memories you gave of me.
Add one stolen night of bliss.
You can't beat the memories you gave of me.
One girl. One boy, some grief, some joy, memories are made of this. Don't forget a small moonbeam. Fold in lightly with a dream. Your lips and mine. Two sips of wine. Memories are made of this.
Then add the wedding bell. The one house where lovers dwell. Three little kids for the flavor. Stir carefully through the days.
the dreams you will savor. With his blessings from above, serve it generously with love. One man, one wife, one love, true life, man.